Music of Stephen Sondheim that always heralds the arrival of J. Wynn Russick, our theater critic here in Studio A. Good to see you, Judy.
Good to be here.
So I'm excited. We're going to talk about a thing that I actually know something about, the musical Oliver. Our daughter Miranda, who's a playwright now, when she was a little kid, she was in, I think, 249 productions of Oliver. So I know this one, you know, Oliver, never before is a boy wanted more. So I actually know the music to this
one. That's it.
And I'm excited because it's at the Annapolis Shakespeare Company. And Linnell and I saw a production they did of Pride and Prejudice a couple months ago. It was terrific. It's the first time I've been down there. It was just great in every way. I was so excited to learn about this wonderful group down there in Annapolis. Now, Oliver, however, for a Shakespeare company, seems like a pretty wacky choice. What's going on?
No wackier really than Pride and Prejudice and Jane Austen, because they don't do just Shakespeare, as you found out. They also do the classics in general. And this is their second musical. They did Kiss Me, Kate last year. Now, that's based on a Shakespeare play on Taming of the Shrew, so this is straying a little bit farther. But in addition to Pride and Prejudice, they are doing this season, opening next week, in fact, an outdoor production of Molière's Tartuffe. So they stretch the definition to include other classics. And Oliver Twist is probably one of Dickens' most famous books. The musical was adapted back in 1960 by Lionel Bart, really a one-man band. He did the script, the music, and the lyrics. The show, like the novel, is set in Victorian England. It opens with starving children in the workhouse. I'm sure your daughter played one of those. So when that opening scene happens, when Oliver Twist asks for more gruel, he ends up being sold to work for an undertaker, and he runs away and he meets the artful Dodger, who is part of a band of child pickpockets who work for a thief called Fagin. And so for Oliver, it's out of the workhouse into the London underworld. Being a Victorian melodrama, a huge coincidence enters in, and as you know, it all ends happily for Oliver, but not before some violence, including a couple of murders. Dickens was really writing social commentary. It was very dark. The musical is much, much jauntier than Dickens' novel, and so is his production. I brought a clip of one of those jaunty numbers. This is I'd Do Anything. It's sung after Oliver has been welcomed into Fagin's crew. It's a song about loyalty, but it's also a big dance number. You see the dregs of society imitating the upper crust. So this is Oliver and one of the ladies of the evening, who is also part of Fagin's entourage.
I'd do anything.
Anything. My gosh. Joey D'Angelo and Jamie Pasquinelli, an Annapolis Shakespeare production of Oliver. So, Judy, you call this a big dance number. Tell us about the production's direction and choreography. I guess the person who founded the company has a big, long career as a dancer and choreographer.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's her background before this. She still performs in cabarets that they do at Annapolis Shakespeare. In this case, she played many roles, including co-directing the show with Donald Hicken, the former head of the theater department at the School for the Arts. And they really keep things moving on stage, especially the scene changes. Sally also choreographed the show, and the choreography is delightful. In the number we just heard, I mentioned imitating the upper crust. Well, boys in Fagin's gang become four horses pulling an imaginary carriage. The passengers are the artful Dodger and Nancy, a prostitute who's a friend of Fagin's and a friend of the boys. It's very clever staging. In the other number, we talked about Food, Glorious Food, sung by those starving workhouse boys. The boys imagine maids coming through with silver platters loaded with food that are just out of reach. And when Oliver asks for more, the other kids encourage him. There's some cute choreography that comes after that with him trying to run away. He's on and off the table. He's held up in the air. In the second act, you may remember a number called Who Will Buy? This is sung after Oliver has actually come into some good luck, and he's watching street vendors. They're selling roses and milk and strawberries. And the choreography here includes the Artful Dodger and an acrobat and a young lady as street performers. I also want to say that the set includes some really atmospheric projections of period paintings and prints, and all of this leavens the darkness in Dickens' story.
Yeah, speaking of the darkness, how is that handled, first of all, in the musical in general and in this production specifically?
Well, I want to say again that the musical is not nearly as dark as the novel, but there are those murders. One victim is a really evil brute. He's killed in plain sight. Seeing his death is actually cathartic for the audience. But the other, without giving too much away, is a very sympathetic character, and it's shocking. But Donald Hickon and Sally Boyette keep it in the shadows. It's pretty much out of sight. I also want to say something in terms of the darkness about Fagin, who runs the gang of child pickpockets. Dickens was writing at a time of anti-Semitism. It was rampant in Britain back then, and he made Fagin a Jewish stereotype. In fact, in the book, he frequently called him just the Jew, but he himself toned this down in a later edition. Even in Lionel Bart's musical, Fagin's two big numbers are done in a minor key, and they have enough of a Jewish sound to them that the two young theatergoers who came with me said they reminded them of Fiddler. Now, Annapolis Shakespeare has an actor named Dexter Hamlet, who is African-American, and he deflects that stereotype, and he gives Fagin a lot of heart. And Bart's musical goes much easier on Fagin. The musical lets him live, for example, which isn't true of Dickens. And Oliver, in terms of darkness again, does have two other genuine villains, the evil brute that I mentioned before, and, frankly, an oppressive social system, although the musical goes kind of easy on that, too. Let's listen to Dexter Hamlet singing Fagin's second act solo, reviewing the situation.
I'm reviewing the situation. Can a fella be a villain all his life? All the trials and tribulations, I better settle down and get myself a wife. And the wife will cook and sew for me, and come for me, and go for me, and come for me, and nag at me. The finger she will wag at me, the money she'll take from me, a misery she'll make for me. I think I better think it out again.
That's Dexter Hamlet and Oliver at Annapolis Shakespeare. So, Judy, it's a big show with a large cast, lots of kids. How do they do?
Well, it is a large cast, more than 20. About half of them are children. We heard Joey DeAngelo, who plays Oliver. He plays him as a gutsy kid, but also kind of a blank slate. Henry Niepoter, who plays the Artful Dodger, is very engaging. I've already talked about Fagin, one of the adults. Helena Farhi, who plays Bill Sykes' girl, the evil brute's girl, Nancy, who's devoted no matter how he treats her, way before the Me Too movement, a strong singer. And there's some colorful supporting performances, also a few intonation issues.
Yeah, well, the singing we've heard today, is they're good, pretty good singers, I think. So in the final analysis, what do you think? Annapolis Shakespeare Company and Oliver, good family entertainment?
My theater-going companions, my husband's twin goddaughters, middle schoolers, enjoyed it, but we did discuss it afterwards, especially Fagin. This version, it's the 2009 London revival, softened some of Dickens' raw edges. You still might want to have a little conversation with the kids you take, and that's not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing at all to talk to your kids. Oliver, it's at the Annapolis Shakespeare Company until a week from Sunday, the 9th of June. You can come to our website, wipr.org/midday, and we'll have more information. Next week, we're going to talk about The Play That Goes Wrong. That's at the Hippodrome Theater. So, Judy, I look forward to that, and we'll see you then.
I do, too.
Lunch for our guests today was provided by Eddie's of Roland Park. They're celebrating 75 years as Baltimore's gourmet grocer. Eddie's is making surprise workplace lunch drops every week this year as part of their year-long 75th anniversary celebration. For details, visit eddiesofrolandpark.com slash anniversary. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt of UMBC and Chris Wilson, the author of a memoir called The Master Plan. We'll talk about the incident at Baltimore's Inner Harbor last weekend involving a large group of teenagers. So what should we expect of our kids, our police, our communities, both wealthy and poor, as we ponder the range of responses to what happened and how those responses often break down along racial lines. Hope you can catch us tomorrow here on Midday at noon. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up right after the NPR newscast at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
This is 88.1 WYPR.